Hey guys, in today's episode of the Bear Performance Podcast, I sit down with my good friend, Dakota Meyer. And if you don't know who Dakota is, he was a United States Marine. He was a sniper in the Marine Corps, and he is a Medal of Honor recipient. Dakota is someone that I highly respect, and I really wanted to dive deeper into this podcast. He's been on the podcast before, and we stay in constant communication, but in today's episode, we really dive deep into some topics that haven't been peeled back before on this podcast. We talk about Dakota's journey through trauma and things that he has tried and experimented with to overcome trauma, specifically from his time in the military and spent overseas on deployments in a very kinetic environment. We also talk about what Dakota is currently working on and towards as he recently became a full-time firefighter in the local Central Texas area. So you guys are going to pull a lot away from this episode. There's so much perspective and real-life experience from a true warrior. So let's dive in to today's episode. You are listening to the Bear Performance Podcast, where we discuss topics on fitness, nutrition, business, and leadership to help you perform at your highest level and go on more. I'm your host, Nick Bear, founder of Bear Performance Nutrition and prior U.S. Army infantry officer. We've scaled our brand through our core pillars of transparency, service, and integrity. And now I want to share with you, through our experience and our guests, how you can optimize your life. Welcome to the show. You get to shove an IV up my arm. I get to shove an enema up your ass.
Wait a minute. That is not that. I didn't know that before. So it's not a hand for a hand here. It's mutual.
It's mutual. That's why the whole time I was laughing as you're putting that in my arm. Like, why are you so happy? Well, later I get to shove something up your ass.
Man, you know, we talked about that enema on a podcast one time.
Dude, I told you about the first time I had an enema, right? I was in South Korea and it was my last MRE I thought I would ever eat in my life.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to clear my body of all this just toxic waste that I've been consuming in South Korea for 9 months. I did this enema thinking it would change my life, and it did in more ways than one. And then I told you about it. Tell me about your experience with an enema.
So you told me about this and you just kept, I mean, you're so convincing on it. And I'd never even thought about an enema. I mean, always joked about them. So I think I asked you, I think I called you one day and I was like, dude, like which kit did you buy? And you like told me the whole kit and everything I needed to put in it.
Amazon.
You told me how to do it.
I walked you through it step by step.
And I ordered it off Amazon. And this kit came in. And I got to tell you, man, it took me a while to build up to where I could do it.
Oh, dude, tell me about it. I've been there every single time I've done one.
And, man, I called you right before. I called you right before just to get another confirmation. You know what I thought the whole time? I thought this was probably the scariest part to it. And it probably helped me whenever you just told me about this last enema. I thought you just told me that and made this story up just to see if I was stupid enough to go home and try it so you could fuck with me.
I should have.
So I went home, got it. Man, the weirdest part is like when you're in the floor.
It's a very vulnerable position.
On your back. And I mean, you fill it up and it's like, you told me, you just said like, it's going to feel like you can't, but just get the whole bag in. Just take the whole bag.
You have to relax.
You have to relax. It's not a comfortable thing.
No, it's not.
It's not. And it is violating.
I've been there, man. For you guys listening, what me and Dakota are talking about right now is an enema, an at-home enema kit. The intent of an enema is to clear out and clean out your colon of waste that is sometimes backed up, compacted.
Well, and like, it's just gut health, right? I mean, like,
it can be very healthy.
Yeah.
A lot of people use it if they're constipated. I personally don't get constipated myself, but I wanted to clear my body of what could be compacted in my colon.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is you have to anally insert fluid through an enema kit in through your rectum. You have to hold it for 10, 15 minutes.
And let me tell you, this sounds easy.
It is very difficult.
It, like 10 or 15 minutes doesn't sound like a long time, but it's a lifetime. Like after you get the bag in and you try to hold it for 10 to 15 minutes, I don't know that I've ever made it to 10.
You start shaking, don't you?
You start fucking shaking. Like imagine like a workout, whether you're doing a plank or like you're doing one of those like hold positions and you get to like the like where you're just, you're trying to make it to that threshold. And that's what it's like the whole time after that bag is full in there.
It's a complete core workout. Can you imagine walking up to a guy, say he's like 80 years old and he's just chiseled, ripped. It's like, dude, what is your secret?
Enemas.
Weekly enemas.
Weekly enemas. How often do you do them?
I've only done three in my life. The one was in South Korea. One was about 2 years ago. And my last one was about 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about coffee enemas. So I was like, you know, I'm going to try this out. So I freshly ground up some organic coffee beans. I brewed this coffee. My wife, Steph, is watching me.
Yeah.
It's like 9 p.m. She's like, what are you doing?
Why are you taking coffee?
I'm about to put this up my butt. Like, I need to get in a mental state right now. I can't talk to you. I have to mentally and physically. Because you know how it is. It is a mental preparation.
Like, first off, just the acknowledging like that you're about to do this. I give you props because you don't hide it. Like, this is the first time I've ever admitted outside to you that I did that.
It is used very frequently in medicine. And people that like really take care of their health and their gut health and their bowel movements and are tracking like body optimization, they're used frequently. Like, I know people that do it weekly.
Weekly?
I couldn't do that because it's a process.
I couldn't do it weekly. It's like, I mean, it takes a lot. Like, you almost cry afterwards.
Well, my last one, this coffee one, I was telling you earlier, I made the mistake and I didn't let it cool long enough. So I thought I did. I mean, you know, it's the most vulnerable position. I double lock doors. I'll lock like every possible way to get into this room. Because imagine, I was telling Trey this one day. Imagine you are in the position of holding the enema and someone walks in to rob your house with a gun and says, like, he just walks in and says, hey man, I'm just gonna let myself out. I don't want to rob this house. I don't know what's going on in here.
What? I mean, I think it's even worse. I mean, what? How does Steph look at you after she walks in and like, oh, I just came in to grab a hair tie?
Oh, dude, Steph is not like even surprised by the things I do anymore. So,
because you're laying on your back.
You're laying on your back.
Yeah.
I personally put my legs up on like the shower.
You have to.
And I get in this position and it is the most just violating position possible. It's so vulnerable.
You know damn well that at any point in time, like the dam could break.
100%. Like you have, it's all, dude, I breathe it's like, it's all about breathing. And if like, you don't control your breathing, you're not, at the damn kid break.
The dam at any, it's kind of like, you know, these towns that are down below a dam and it's been raining for days. And like they start getting these warnings of evacuation. Like that would, like that's on the level of where you're at.
It's a tsunami.
Tsunami coming.
Yep.
Like it's no joke, man. And it's intense. And like it is a cleanse of you. It's a humbling experience. It humbles you.
You'll never forget that.
And the funny part is this just came up because before we started the show, Owen was, I don't know, something came up about a prostate exam. And Owen was like, oh, you know, you're almost to the age of prostate exam. And Nick goes, oh, I do enemas. So like prostate exam, it's like JV to me.
I'll welcome that in. Hey, Doc, come on in. I already started it for you. Come on in here. So it's funny because I'm I'm really into like human optimization right now.
Yeah.
So, and I said Steph wasn't surprised when she walked in and found out I was doing an enema. The other day she walked in and I recently bought this thing called a Juve red light, infrared light therapy. So I'm standing in this room, butt naked in front of this red light, 6 inches away from this big red light. I'm listening to classical music and she walks in. She said, "What in the hell are you doing right now?" I said, "I'm optimizing. I got this red light shining on me, trying to optimize every part of my life. Classical music, I'm just feeling it."
Yeah.
I'm just feeling it. So the way this whole thing got started too.
Yeah.
Dakota recently opened up an liquid IV clinic. And I want to talk about that and why you got started. But when I asked Dakota to come on the podcast, he said, "Yeah, I'll put an IV in your arm and you can have this IV. I have this IV in my arm right now that's currently magnesium, taurine, zinc, vitamin B complex, and zinc." Mm-hmm. I have this, what is it, 1,000 milliliters?
1,000 ml bag.
1,000 milliliter IV going in my body right now. So I'm getting a nice little vitamin mineral drip.
Yep.
And I'm going to be hydrated as all hell after this, which is great with this humidity and heat we got going on in Texas.
For sure.
But tell me about this business. How did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, man. You know, like, so I think there's like this transition in life of, and I'm starting to see it in the Marine Corps. I mean, you know, in the military, you're never taught about like wellness. You're just literally, yeah, you're taught how to work out, if you would call it that. You're taught how to train, but basically you just abuse your body. You never take care of it, right? Like it's just abuse, 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 right? You know, I got out of the Marine Corps hurt like everybody else does, tired of working out, just kind of let myself go. And then I've hit this point to where things like affect me more. Like I don't bounce back from things quite as fast, right? And I'm on a fire truck and I'm going out. And even in the military though, like we would drink and we would have our medics, our corpsmen, give us IVs. I mean, we've been doing this since I was in the Marine Corps, right? I mean,
very prevalent in the military.
Very prevalent, right? Like we used to give IVs. It was no big deal, right? And so I just had this, I was actually at a fire station and some of the guys were talking about doing an IV company. And I was like, man, this is such a great idea of like, if I can put an IV company together, I love helping people. Like, man, you know, we just had a conversation, like as much as I despise people, like I do have this desire to just like, I love watching people succeed. I love making people's day better. Like that's what makes me tick. So, you know, this is a way it like fulfills all those goals, right? Like it's a good business. Like we're doing mobily. So like we bought a Prevost bus, it holds 52 people. And basically we wrapped it and we're going to be at Coke Fest. We're going to be down at the beer garden for all the games, home games. So we're just trying to multiply this and be it like, we're going to try to get out to A&M for tailgate for the ball games and just trying to go to places where people are out doing their thing, but then we can help hydrate them. You know, most Americans are walking around daily dehydrated. And so like I get to help people and, you know, I teamed up with Brandon Harrell, who's a close friend of mine, with David Drury, who is a PA, who's also an Army SF medic. We got this whole team together and it's just like we get to serve people and, you know, I'm excited about it because like I'm trying to get more into wellness of like you're talking about. I think the thing that hits me the most about it is like I run on these people I see and I don't know why it hits me, but like I do CPR on people. I see people have heart attacks. And they're all like 55, 60, 65. And I look at them, I'm like, man, that could be me. Could you imagine working your whole life and getting to a point to where you can finally retire and then you die of a heart attack from the stress that you put on it and not taking care of it from all that time?
Dude, it's like you wait your entire life for this moment and that moment just...
It's done.
Boom.
Or you have a stroke or you have to get on blood thinner. I mean, it's just all these things. And so like, I just... You know, man, I got kids and yeah, so like that's where it came from, the idea. So it's called the Dash IV from Own the Dash. Yeah, man, it's awesome. It's fun.
That's kind of a big thing I'm a proponent of right now is I think we've come to this spot in the world and fitness as a whole where there's performance and there's health and wellness. And people think they're the same thing sometimes and it's not. And I'm really trying to instill this in my content and with BPN's content is a lot of people who just focus on performance are sometimes at their least healthy state.
I mean, look at bodybuilders.
Bodybuilders, marathon runners peaking for a run. There's this one Olympic marathon runner, Ryan Hall, who I follow. he used to have the world's best time in the marathon. He had to retire from running because he drained his hormones and his testosterone to where his testosterone was so low, he was so unhealthy that he couldn't compete or run anymore. So we look at these people that are high performers and athletes.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we think they are the healthiest people in the world, which is not necessarily the case. So finding this balance between in the middle of performance and health is really what I'm trying to advocate. And I think a lot of people confuse that for the same exact thing.
Well, I mean, wellness is a holistic approach. Performance is just you're doing whatever it takes to win. That I look at it as like wellness is more of a whole, I think, you know, obviously when I watch what you do like a ton of things. You can go out here and run a marathon. You could go run an Ironman. You can go swim. You could go do a triathlon. You could turn around and go in the gym and lift heavy weights too, right? And it's like, and that's wellness, right? Instead of just like focusing on one aspect of it, right? And I think like that's where I'm kind of at with it. Like I'm slowly getting over there. Like, I mean, I've lost like, I think in the last 3 months, I was weighing 242 and then I weighed 215 this morning.
Oh, I can tell. I can see it in your face and your body when you walked in today.
Yeah. I mean, I feel a lot better. You know, I mean, I had a mild heart attack last October.
Really?
Yeah. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Got rushed to the hospital. I tell you, like, you know, I see it all the time. And it's like, it just kind of, it worried me of like, what am I doing? And I just like, man, I'll tell you where I really felt it was when I got rid of sugar. Like I've still dabbling. Like I'm not in ketosis or anything. I do still take in a little bit of sugar, but not like I used to. Like, man, I paid attention to it. And I used to come in at night and my kids, like, I don't know why I would do it, but like I would go all day not eating hardly anything. And then it would hit me at like 8 o'clock at night, like after I got my kids down for bed, and I would go in and I would eat 15 packs of Gushers.
It's like binge on it.
15 packs of Gushers. Like I would literally, I've looked at the trash can the next morning and I would eat 15 packs of Gushers, 5 or 6 fruit roll-ups. And then I would turn around and drink 2 Cokes right behind it. Like 5 days a week.
Would you crash from that? Like, how did you feel after eating on that? How'd you fall
asleep? The next morning, I would wake. I would go to sleep right afterwards. The next morning, though, like, I just feel so tired. Like, I feel so heavy.
Yeah.
I never could figure it out. And, like, I don't take in hardly any sugar anymore. But, man, like, that was probably the biggest change. Because, like, man, I'm like, this is bullshit. I don't know why. I've got, like, I come from, my dad is just as hard-headed as I am. And I'm like, oh, I don't need that. I don't need to worry about that. I can over outwork a bad diet. And that
it's a lot of people's mentality.
And that is not true. I mean, you can for so long, but eventually your body's going to wear out. You get tired, right? Like you can only go so many days of burning 2000 calories trying to work out twice a day and your body needs recovery, right? And it's like, yeah, man, it's like, yeah. So I'm with you. I mean, the wellness piece of it's kind of like a different phase of life.
I kind of want to hone in on that real quick in regards to the mini heart attack that you experienced. How much of that would you contribute to your nutrition and your fitness? And how much would you say was contributed to stress?
It was stress.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I've had to learn the hard way over the past couple of years. Being a business owner, there's a lot of stress that comes with that. Yeah. There's a lot of responsibility that falls on you. Stress is such like a, it's like alcohol. It's a toxin to your body. There's nothing good for stress for your body. Some sort of stress stimulus in terms of physical and mental. Yeah, that stimulus is good. But when you have this overabundance of stress, you're not recovering. You're not performing. You can't think clear. You're not sleeping. Sleep is everything.
Yeah.
Where at that time, what were the stress levels at? And like, what was it coming from?
I mean, I was actually driving an ambulance when it happened.
Really?
Yeah.
I was working for the fire company?
No, I was working. I was working at a fire department down South Austin, and I was on the ambulance that day, and we'd been training. And I looked over at the guy next to me, and I was like, my chest is hurting. I said, like, and he kind of, like, looked at me. He's like, well, what's going on? And I was like, dude, my left arm's numb. And I just, like, said these things, and I'm like, I know in my head when somebody's telling me this, I know what I'm thinking, like heart attack. So I drove back to the station and it just kept getting worse and worse. And I was like, dude, something's wrong with me. They go get the monitor and they put it on me. And like, I'll never forget like looking at the crew, like looking at their faces, like they pushed, like they put the 12 lead on me. Like when they opened up my shirt to look at, like to put the 12 lead on me, it was just covered in sweat. And they're like, ooh. So I put it on me and like, I'll never forget looking at their faces. They're like, we need to roll another med unit. Like they went ahead and put aspirin on board. They turned around and put nitro on board. And like, they gave me 3 doses of nitro. And
is that like an IV drip?
No, nitro is, it's a vasodilator. So basically what causes your a heart attack is whenever basically your vessels get clogged, your heart's pumping harder than it should. And what it does is it starts to tear down the heart. And that's what is a heart attack piece of it, right? And so what a vasodilator does is it opens up the veins to help that blood to keep flowing through without overworking your heart. So that's what they did. They put that on board. And then obviously my blood pressure started to tank because that's when it opens up the vessels, your blood pressure starts to go down. And then I got into the back of an ambulance and they took me to the hospital to South Austin, and it wasn't a bad, I mean, it's not a bad heart attack. I went to the heart doctor a few days later, went and did all the stuff. And she's like, it's stress. Like, she's like, stress is what did this. I'll never forget, man, is like, I looked at my phone and I thought I was going to pass out. It takes a lot to scare me. And just, it ran through my mind, the thought that I might never see my kids again. And like, that was like an eye opener. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, what if I pass out and I never get to talk to him again? And I just remember looking at the guys on the shift and I said, hey, look, like if I go into cardiac arrest, like I don't want you to do CPR on me. And they were like, fuck it. We're acting like we didn't hear that.
Why didn't you want them to?
I see CPR and I would rather just not. Like CPR is a rough thing on the body.
I believe it. Reactivating
your heart. Yeah, you're literally pumping the blood through your system through chest compressions. Yeah. And so I just told him that. But yeah, man, it was like a weird feeling. And so like after that, I was like, man, I gotta do something. But it's stress. I mean, obviously my diet doesn't help. And obviously like you don't know, like I could be wrong. There's not many people who can have a high stress level and a great diet. You have to find balance in all of it. Like when I train, like I just feel like you have to every day get better at being emotionally, mentally, and physically better. All three of those are like a three-legged stool. And you could be in physically great shape. I know some people who are in some of the best shape I know, mentally, their mind's not right. You know what I mean? Or emotionally. It's like how do you build these legs on this chair to keep the chair even?
I've had to learn that the hard way the last couple of years where
right.
I thought that when I was younger, I think I've grown up and matured a lot the last couple of years, but when I was younger, I thought that everything in life that mattered was performance and getting stronger and bigger and faster. And when I just focused on that, I started neglecting my mental state of reducing stress in my life and sleeping more or emotional with relationships and stuff. Everything's out of balance. I've had to learn the hard way that you have to grow all these things together. Because when you grow all these things together, that's overall life growth and maturity.
What do you think's caused you to what was your wake up call in that?
Overtraining in certain things. I've overtrained multiple times before in my life. But I think also getting married was one of those things.
For sure, right?
I thought getting married was, we got married, I thought it was literally just signing a piece of paper, throwing rings on.
Yeah,
I didn't think a whole lot would change, but a whole lot changes.
It's pretty cool though, isn't it?
It is cool. Marriage changes a lot, but it forces you to grow emotionally together. Mm-hmm. It's been a brand new experience and I've enjoyed like exploring that.
Yeah.
But I've had to learn the hard way that when you overtrain and you neglect these other things that are important to your life, nothing feels right. Doesn't matter how successful you are, how much money you're making. Yeah. When one thing is neglected, it's just like something doesn't feel right. Something's off.
Especially if it's a priority, right? And I think that's what happens is like a guy said this to me once and it really made a lot of sense to me. And I think like with goal setting, I mean, look, everybody's like, oh, well, just what are your goals? We can all sit here and name a list of goals of what we want. But where you really challenge somebody is not asking them what their goals are, what their priorities are. But it's like when somebody tells you a goal, obviously they don't have that yet, right? Because that wouldn't be a goal. But you have to ask them, like, what are you willing to give up for this goal? What are you willing to sacrifice? Like, at what cost? Like, what are you willing to pay for this goal? Right? And I think that's where people mess up. Like, I think that's why New Year's resolutions don't work. I think that's why, like, people's goal setting is like, they just set it. And I can tell you the guy who actually like made this click in my head is Sean from Playbook. He looked at me one time and I said, he's like, how many subscribers do you want? And I was like, well, I want to get to 2,000 or 3,000. And he's like, have you ever sold 2 or 3? Like, what have you ever sold 2 or 3,000 of? And I was like, I mean, obviously my companies have. And he's like, well, how long did that take? I was like, okay. Like, now it's starting to make sense as to, you know, we all set these goals, but we never know, like, where are we getting these numbers from? And it's kind of like an interesting piece of, like, what are you willing to give up to get and achieve your goal? Like, what are you willing to sacrifice? Because you're going to sacrifice something. And the bigger your goal, the more sacrifice it's going to take. And you know that. I mean, you know that. I mean, you're talking, look at what you had to sacrifice with your marathon running. I mean, look at the time. I mean, I've watched you for the last 2 years literally sacrifice everything for your business, for your marriage, and for your training. And it's just, it's not like people think it just comes. And it's like, I mean, how many weekends? When's the last time you've had a weekend where you didn't do anything, a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday?
Years. That's like...
Years.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head right there, where people think that you can just keep adding on top of. And when you keep adding on top of, it's almost like you're building this... I think of Jenga, you know, the game Jenga. You keep adding bricks on top. When you add a brick on top, another brick has to come out of the side. And the higher you build, eventually there's going to be a collapse unless you build some infrastructure and some foundations. I've done the same thing. Like, the things that we're talking about, we fucked up on all of these things. That's how we've learned it, right? Yeah. It's like you think you can keep adding on top of, but there has to be sacrifice. So once you prioritize what really is important to you and what you really want to go after and chase and what that goal is, you then decide, what do I have to do to get there? And what do I have to eliminate to also get there?
And that's the other thing. You know, it's not so much about, in a lot of these things, let's talk about diet. To lose this weight, I don't follow a strict measured out diet. But what I've done is I conscious eat. Everything I put in my body, I look at it and go, okay, what is this going? I literally ask the question, what is this doing for my body? And look, there are some times like I'll still eat like shit, but I still ask that question. And then I still say, like, is this helping me for my goal or is this going against my goal? And as long as I admit that and I'm real with myself, well, then I know that I got a little extra work to do for that. I'm not doing it all the time. And it's just like with people, like you talk about, you know, we just talked about this, but like your mental wellness, it's not necessarily about getting more people. It's usually about eliminating the bad people, like getting rid of the cancer with social media and with texting and emails and phones. Like, we are literally connected to more people than any generation we've ever known. And how many of those people are really good for us? How much of that time in that phone is really good for us and a positive influence? Whether you're looking at a TV, whether you're going out with friends, how many of them are really adding value to your life?
Do you ever do a social media detox, or do you ever do like a cleanse where, like, something I'll do every once in a while is if I keep seeing someone pop up on my feed, mm-hmm. or someone that I followed, and when I see their stuff, it puts me in a funk, puts me in a weird mood. So I'll go either unfollow or even block that account. Not because I don't like that person, but because it's not really doing anything good for me, it's typically putting me in a weirder mood. Do you do that kind of stuff?
I've never done it, but I'll tell you, like, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know why. I mean, look, I mean, today has just been like, I woke up just it, like the last couple months have been just like shit. It's just been it's like everywhere I turn, it's negative. It's bad. It's fucked up. I mean, it's just like, you just got to start, like, I got to start eliminating the people around me. So, I mean, even driving over here, I had like an hour drive over here from Reveille Peak. And I was just thinking to myself, I was like, man, what am I going to do? What am I going to do to fix this? And so, no, have I ever done that? No. But like, that is probably the best advice you're going to give me today. But what I see is like, I mean, I've got girls sliding in my fucking DMs all the fucking time. It's just like all toxic. Like, it's like, there's no value added. Like, it's just, you got negative people talking shit to you all the time. You got people who don't even know you. You got people, and I don't know why, but like, there's people from my back that I used to know, haven't talked to in years, reaching out to me. It's like they all just come at once. I'm not the same guy that I was a year ago. I'm not the same person that I was 2 years ago. And it's kind of like, when you hold those people in your life, like when they haven't gone the journey with you, or they're not willing to grow with you, you can't keep them with you, because they'll pull you back to the guy that you were when you were around them. That's why you were around them. And there's a reason that you let them go in your past. There was a reason that you followed them on social media at that time. And there was a reason that you hung around them back then. And there's a reason that you don't today. And it's nothing against them. Like, everybody is on their own path. But it's like, you're not the person you was then. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm reading this book right now, actually. I highly recommend it. You should check it out. It's called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And the reason I started reading it is because I look at where I'm at in my life right now, and I look at my business. I'm really proud of where we're at right now in business, but I know that the things that we did leading up to this moment, you just can't keep replicating and expecting them to work.
Yeah.
Obviously, what you did in the past and has led you to some sort of level of success, you have to be appreciative of it and grateful. But in order to keep pushing forward, you have to become innovative and really start thinking outside of the box, which is tough. But I say that because in this part of the book I'm in right now, and I just started the last couple of days, I'm always reading something. And I found that very beneficial for growth, emotionally, mentally, physically. And it's talking about the amount of negativity that's out there. It is everywhere. And if you listen to someone, if you talk to someone, think of the amount of times someone starts a sentence with however, but, or no. And the reason they're going to be doing this is because they want to add overvalued information to your conversation. So people don't listen anymore. People don't just sit there and listen. When they're listening to you, they're thinking, how am I going to respond to either put this down or provide value from my point of view?
Yeah.
Instead of just soaking it in, thinking about it, being open-minded. And I think when I'm listening to this book and I'm thinking about the world and like, how do we make a positive impact? How do we fix this? And it's hard. I compare it to, if I think of the world, in the United States, I think of the military. And I think of the way the military had to implement new systems and infrastructure to facilitate change across the unit. We'll take that 1% and apply that to the entire United States, the world.
Yeah.
It's messy and it's hard and it's difficult and it doesn't really work out the exact way you want it to. So how do you create this positive energy everywhere?
It's hard. I think for me, like, it's hard for me to listen to people because I don't respect them. The people I do respect, like, I will soak up what they say and I will go home and I will overthink it all day, right? I'll figure out how to apply it. But there's not many of those people because I just hear them. I just hear, like, all they do is they just talk. And I know, like, and you can tell how people talk. Like, when they say but, like the but. Mm-hmm. I hate the word but. The door was open, but. That is like, but has been the, but it's not my fault. It's not like there's no accountability when you put a but in it.
It's handing it, it's taking it off of you and putting it on someone or something else.
Exactly. Or, yeah, I did this. However, I mean, all those things are just transitions into, it's just a way to get it off of them, right? And when I hear all that shit, it's like, I can't even fathom it. Like, I don't care what you've done in life. I don't care what you've done up to this point. I don't care what you've messed up. You know, and all this changed for me, like, I went 2 years ago in November. I went to Mexico, and like, man, I'll tell you.
I remember this.
I'll be honest, like, me and Bristol are kind of going through this thing right now of, she still sees me as the guy I was when I was married to her. Let me tell you up front, I'm evil. Like, I've got an evil side in me. I've got an evil, malicious, vindictive. Like, I have got that to a level of that people couldn't even fathom.
Would you say that's because of traumatic experiences in the military?
What I would say is like, you just talked about it. There had to be a point where you had a chip on your shoulder that like, no, I'm going to fucking build this business. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, look at all y'all laughing at me now, right? Like you just come in and, oh, I'm going to, you know, you just put your head down and you got to fight everywhere around you because everybody's doubting you and life's just throwing you. I mean, you're just in that grind and you either fight or you're done. You know what I mean? You know, I went through that phase of life. I mean, it was kind of like that for me growing up. And then, you know, you turn around and go to the military. And then, I mean, you didn't have an option to be both. When you go in the military in 2006, you got two wars going on. You go into the infantry. Like, you're not sitting here trying to figure out how to be thoughtful. You're not sitting here trying to work on your wellness. You're not sitting here trying to work on being a good person. Good people don't kill bad people. Bad people go kill evil people. You don't just go get one of these guys who's the nicest guy ever that's over there that's going to go do work of literally killing other people. That's not how it works. And I think like, and this is so stupid, but like Deadpool said it best. He said, I'm just a bad guy that kills worse people. And that's what I was. And you can only live your life so long fighting. You know those guys, the man, they fight, like they're going to fight every battle. They're like they're in, and they might not be wrong. Like they might be right, the battles they fight, but it doesn't mean you don't, just because you're right and just because you can fight and you're justified to fight doesn't mean you need to. And I think like that's the transition like I've tried to make in like the last 2 years. And I went, man, my anxiety was through the roof and I went down to this Mexico trip. Basically we went down there and we did Ibogaine and 5-MeO-DMT, which is from the toad. And man, it like, it gave me my life back. My life's been chaos from day one. I grew up in, especially the first 10 years of my life with on my mom's side, it was just, I mean, it was a constant fucking chaos. And it wasn't with my dad, you know, but those were obviously the first 10 years of life. When you start looking back, those are like huge impactful years of setting up the rest of your life, you know, especially me having kids. Like there's like a lot of phases to it that like, this sets up, like if you have anxieties in the first 4 years, like all this stuff. And anyways, so I went and did this trip, man. And it just gave me a whole nother perspective on life. And it's like, man, I don't want to fight anymore. I like to shoot guns, but man, like when I pick a gun up, it like, to me, it like, it just brings back this side of me that I don't want to touch. I don't know if that sounds weird or not, but like.
Because it reminds you of who you were before.
Yeah. It reminds me of who I was before, and I don't want to be that person anymore. Like, is he in there? 100%. 100%. But I just don't want to feel that anymore. Like, I don't want to feel that anger. Like, I don't want to hurt anybody anymore.
Did you see, when you entered the military, the Marine Corps in 2006, did you see this happen to a lot of other people, where they went in and then,
well, I think
because
that's
the war was so kinetic, it changed you?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why, like, I lost two guys from our platoon today or this week. And I think that like they don't make the transition and they get fucking tired. You know, you can only fight so long. You get tired of fighting. You just get tired of it. And I think they never were able to transition to something else. I think that's why people, I don't know, but I know for me, man, like if I ever thought you had bad intent, I didn't give a fuck. There was no limits of what extremes I would go to try to ruin your life. I mean, it took a lot to get me there. When I was on this Ibogaine, I was on it for, I went in at 8, so I took it at 8 p.m. at night on Friday. And at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon on Saturday, I came off of it. And I literally watched my whole life, man. Like, I watched how I talked to my ex-wife. Like, I watched how I treated people. And
from like a third person view?
Like, I was like, it was like I was watching my life on a TV screen. Like, I was walking down this city, and the city, like, I was walking through these city streets, and like, the city was like cloudy and gloomy. It was kind of like my whole life. It was just like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just so crazy. And I was walking through it, and it was almost like a, how I would imagine Chicago. It was almost like a Chicago, like, you know, like the older style buildings, you know, like the city streets. And like, for some reason, I walked in this one room. And when I walked in this room, I came out on this huge stage. Like, it was like a stage, like I was going to speak. And all these people were in there. And I remember looking around and like, all these people, like, and all I felt was disappointment. Like, I felt like the disappointment, you know, like you feel like you've disappointed or let somebody down. And like all these people, like it was just like, then it went through and like all these people popped up, like their faces, like it zoomed in, like on all these people's faces. And it was like all the people in my life, I just never could please or I was never good enough for. Like, it was like my mom, it was Bristol, like all these people, like that I just felt like in my heart, like I've never been good enough for, I let down or I hurt. And it just like, I watched all of them for like 5 hours just go by. I kept running up to them, trying to talk to them. Like, they just didn't say nothing. They just like looked at me. And all I could see was like the hurt that I've hurt them in their, like their face. And so then I come out of that room and I'm walking down the street, and like all the street signs, it was crazy. Like, I would look at, and it was like, you know, like those gas gauges that say, like, you know, like the, like on a lawnmower or something, it's like E at the bottom. When the gas gauge goes up to full, it's got the F.
Yeah.
And it's green. Mine, all of them, everywhere I looked in town, it said finished. And everything was this close to finishing. And it was like, I never finish anything. I never finish anything I start. And it was everywhere. Like on all the road signs. It was everywhere I looked, like everywhere. I would see like this beautiful, like really ball of light. Like the only thing that was kind of light in the whole place. And I would run to it and it would be my two kids playing. It was crazy, man. And like, I just seen like how I talk to people. So then I come out of it and I just like really thought about it like so much. Then the next day you do the 5-MeO DMT. Man, it was like you take it and then you lay down and you like go feet first. It's almost like you feel like you're time, like I felt like I was time warped somewhere, like on Star Trek or something, like through a tube. You just felt weightlessness and you felt good. It was in the whitest place I've ever seen. Like, there's no white that I've ever seen in my life. Like, there's no words in the dictionary that could ever describe how beautiful this white was and how good it felt. Like, I'm not talking about like, you know, like when you drink, you feel drunk.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that. It's like your soul. It's like
warm.
I don't know. Like, you ever get like it's almost like whenever I remember Atlee being born and me seeing her for the first time, like, it's not like a body, but it's like just like your heart, like your soul, the soul part of you, the perfect temperature. Like, you felt what true love was, like love, like you felt love and good. It was like the most beautiful place ever. And like, you're just there and you're kind of like, all this is in me. This is in me. And the only thing that keeps me from being happy is my ego. Because the first thing I thought about, like when I started coming off of it, was this is the first thought that crossed my mind. This is how they told me that I knew that I was coming off of it. Was I started coming off of it, and the first thought I thought was, gosh, you're such a piece of shit. You're like doing drugs down in Mexico. And it was so crazy, man, because like all my anxiety was gone. I could really tell that there was truly some good in me.
Is it because you knew what changes you had to make next when you got back?
Nope, I think it was because we can't ever go forward and grow living in the past. If you can't let go of your mistakes yesterday and quit talking about them and quit holding those in your bag, how do you get better and evolve from them? And I think that's what I've done, man. Like, I've carried my teammates on my back, all my teammates getting killed. Everything that I've seen is I've taken responsibility for it. But how long do you suffer for it? You might as well just go to prison. Like, if you're going to just walk around with all these negative things and all the mistakes in your life and let those ruin your tomorrows, well, what are you doing? And that's what I've been doing. Like, that's why, and I don't need to fight anymore. I don't need to be evil. Like, I don't need to be all these things. Like, I just literally, like, I just literally want to help people. I think that, like, I've gone through life so long of, instead of enjoying and appreciating people being happy and successful, that I resented them for it because I couldn't be it. Like, how many people do you think are attacking you? Not because of anything you're doing, but they're attacking you because, or they're coming at you or saying negative things about you because they can't figure out how to make their own life better. So they want to fucking ruin yours.
I think so many people struggle with that. So many people struggle with the fact that it's resentment and they're unhappy with what they're doing and with where they're at in their life. It's like when they say, must be nice to other people. Must be nice to have that or be doing that. But they don't see what it took to get there. People have the opportunity, but they resent what they don't have.
Yep. And that was me, man. I mean, it sucks, but yeah. So like now what I'll do is like, I'll do like a psilocybin quarterly or when I start feeling like I need it. There's just so much freedom in being able to see the other side. You should read a book called The Immortality Key. It will change your life.
Is that what you read before going to Mexico?
I didn't even, like when I went to Mexico, I told the doctor when I got down there, I told the doctor that I'm coming so I can go back and tell the world that all the stuff he's doing is bullshit.
Did someone take you down there?
Yeah, one of my close buddies was like, hey, go, you need this. He went and did it. And I was like, okay, I'll go. But like, I've tried everything. Like, it's bullshit. I went and did it, and man, when you see that side of it, it's like a whole different ball game. It sounds crazy. It gives you like a peace you can't get here. You can't get that deep in your mind and work through things. Like, we're all, I think consciously, we try to be who we truly want to be. There's nothing you can do about what is subconsciously put in you. Like, imagine we're like an iPhone. And imagine that, like, I mean, look, how many, when you get your iPhone, before you ever select or do anything, how many apps does it already have on it?
A bunch.
Yeah, pre-programmed by somebody you don't know, by what somebody has set for you. How many of those things, like your beliefs, and how many of those subconscious thoughts that are already intertwined into you before you ever had a way to even put things together? You're kind of like an iPhone. Before the age of 10, all you knew was to listen to what you were surrounded by. All you knew was whatever the people's thoughts were and what you were told. And like, even today, like we still put these apps, we get these apps and these cookies or whatever we call, like they get them on our phone, but we get them inside of us by what content we consume. What happens to your phone when you start getting bad apps on it? What happens to your computer when you start getting bad apps on it? Starts running slower. You need updates. It gets bugs in it, right? I think that what this does is it allows you to work on your subconscious piece of it. Cause that's what gets us. Consciously, we can try to be whoever we want, but subconsciously, what is engraved into us is what gets us.
Do you think this trip down to Mexico saved your life at the time?
I told myself before I got on that plane that if I didn't come back and it didn't give me relief, that when the plane hit the ground, that I was going to kill myself. That was what was on the line.
So that experience was just that powerful.
Yeah. It gave me my whole life back. Like in a way that I've never had it.
Now, when you did this experience, were you able to interpret these things yourself? Or was there someone like after this experience that helped you interpret that trip to figure out what are the things you need to work on and what parts of your life are hurting?
So I'm a deep thinker. Like, I am deep. And a lot of my friends have gone through it. So I talk to them about, like, hey, what does this mean? Or what does this mean, right? But to be honest, like, we all know what the truth is with things. It's about, do we want to face it? That's what these medications do. Is, do you really want to go face what you already know? because we're all acting like we don't know it. We all truly look in the mirror and know our discrepancies. And this makes you look at it at a holistic approach. But no, I didn't have it. Like, I mean, I talked to some people about it, right? I mean, it's more of one of these things, like internally, you just process it of we're all good people. Nobody wants to be unhappy. Nobody wants to hurt other people. Nobody truly does. Majority of people are good people. And they know the difference between right and wrong. Sometimes you just got to lay it out to them. We're all walking around and I think everybody's just so overwhelmed with how negative things are that they can't even look internally to work on themselves because they're so consumed with the negativities that's around them and that the world and the media puts on them and social media that they can't, like, they're so, like, their pack is so full with the world's shit that they can't even try to start working on themselves because they, like, they're afraid that it's going to be add to how negative things are. So they kind of build their own reality to be safe in. Instead of turning everything else off and focusing internally, they are putting all their attention externally to shit that doesn't matter instead of focusing internally. Like, man, like, think about this. When you're trying to make all these people happy, we kind of talked about this earlier, but man, when you're trying to do what everybody tells you, hey, Nick, you should be doing this, or this is how you should run your company, or this is what you should be doing, or you should be donating to this, or you need to go try this. Like, when everybody's trying to tell you how to live your life and you're trying to do that to meet their expectations, are you meeting your own?
Never.
Never. And that's what everybody's doing in the world right now. Like, they're trying to live up to the worldly standards. They're trying to be an advocate for this, or they're trying to live life this way because someone told them that this is the way you should live it, or this is how you're supposed to do it. This is how you're supposed to think, and this is what you're supposed to be changing. This is how you're supposed to be raising your kids, and this is where you should be donating your money, and this is how many times you should be going to church, and this is the God you should pray to. Like, look at all these things of the world telling you how you should live your life. And people are trying to meet all those expectations because they are good people. But they're literally all empty because they're failing themselves.
That's so true. Some of the people I know, family members, friends, they're to their core the best people with the best intentions. But they're always worried about what other people think and doing things for them that they neglect themselves and their families. And in turn, they're a wreck mentally, emotionally. And from the outside, everyone thinks they're doing great. They're happy. They're fulfilled. But deep down, they're not. So I have this thing here at work, and it's worked out very well for me. And it's provided me a lot of fulfillment and passion, where everyone's always been telling me, Nick, in order to impact the world with your platform, you need to be doing this and that and this and that. And I typically just stay in my lane. I do my thing, because my theory, and I think it's worked out so far, is that I have a responsibility, a direct responsibility, to use this platform for good, but also because I have the responsibility of people in this building that work for me, and I'm responsible for them and their families. And if I can do well for them and develop them to be good people and instill good habits and responsibilities, then they'll go, each person will go 10, touch 10 more people.
Yeah.
Those 10 people touch and impact 10 more people. And it just spreads like wildfire. So, like, I try to really focus on the people in my circle that I can really influence and impact to be better people. And I feel like that's worked out pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, look at the culture you've built. If you don't think that that hasn't had a direct impact on why you're successful, when did you start that mentality? When you started hiring people?
As soon as I started hiring people.
I mean, I remember coming here when you were just in this middle, right? You just came here. You just moved in the middle. You're working out here. How many people did you have working for you then?
Four.
You focus on that and look at the success you've had. Like, look at the success and look at how hard. I mean, these people, like, every time I come here, it's growing. You're not in a supplement business. You're not in a media business. You're literally in a people business.
I say it all the time. I truly believe that.
And if you stay focused on the people, like your customers, your employees, well, look what's happening. They're a direct reflection of you. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And I've got this other thing I'm trying to figure all of it out. But, you know, there's two standards in life. There's society standards or the corporate standards or whatever, social standards. And then there's your individual standards. And people are literally, societal standards are dropping. And people are just meeting the bare minimum of what it takes, what society says to be a decent human being. And I think that's where the world's going wrong, right? Like, when society starts dropping its standards, people start dropping their standards. People are only going to rise to what you hold them accountable to. We're all accountable to something. We started this conversation on how do you impact the world? Like, you just keep raising the standard. You keep raising the standard and pushing the bar, but it's got to be a holistic approach. I just got on full time over at a fire department. It's fulfilling. Like, it takes up a ton of my time. But the guys I'm around are some of the best guys I've ever met in my life. Like, they are, you talk about what good people looks like. Man, I can take you into a room full of guys that want nothing from anybody, that want no recognition, but are good to their core.
Is that why you decided to do that? I wanted to bring that up. Is that why you started working with the fire company? You recently just got, you finished all your training. And
yeah, I got on full time with them.
Full time now. And that was like, what, last week?
Mm-hmm.
What made you start doing that? Because you were all over the place. You were writing books. Yeah. You were speaking. You were traveling nonstop.
And I still am, you know. But I just seen how good of guys they were. I would say that department probably had the most impact on me becoming a firefighter. And like, I was volunteering, you know, I was just going to do it in my spare time. I walked in and met this guy, and it was probably it's definitely a rough patch in my life. Walked in and met this guy. He's now my captain. He's also my fire chief over at another department. You know, I mean, the guy changed my life. He held me accountable. He didn't give a shit about where I came from, what I've done in the past, like, you know, anything. Like, didn't give a shit about any of the minute stuff. Like, that if people focus on that, you're kind of like, all right, yeah, like, you're not good for me. But just a dude that held me accountable. And I remember asking him probably after like the third time of meeting him. And I was like, will you help me become a firefighter? He's like, yeah, yeah, I will. I'll tell you how to do it. And guy answers the call, and he is the epitome of what a good human being is. And now I'm on a crew with them. Like, you know, you got that one person, and then, you know, I got another buddy up here at Georgetown, a couple of them up here at Georgetown that are just incredible guys. And, you know, you just start building this network of people that you're like, I'm not even worthy to be in their realm. Like, I'm on a crew of guys that like, I look to every one of them. I'm like, man, like, I want to be like you. And that's what makes you get better, right? It pushes you out of your comfort zone. I feel like I've spent since I got out of the Marine Corps, I've spent the last 10 years focusing on me and my businesses and building my life up and just taking, you know, I feel like taking. And I just felt like I wanted to give back and try to be a good human being for the community. I did this rant on social media the other day. I called them LARPers. Of people that dress up and
I watched that
put on kit and stuff and took a ton of heat from it. And
I saw the engagement. The engagement was high on that one.
Yeah. But I think what all these people miss is that I don't care. Like, I think it is pretty cool that people dress up and mimic what people like I know have done. It's kind of cool, right? I mean, it's kind of a cool deal that people take pride in that, and it's become cool in this generation. So it's kind of cool, right? It's kind of like people when they wear like Michael Jordan's jersey, or you know what I mean, things like that. So it's kind of cool to see that.
Do you think it's cool to see that? Not cool, but interesting. Almost humbling to see the, you know, when people dress up like operators, that there's an ignorance involved of what has gone into that responsibility.
So, and that's, yeah. And so, like, I think that's where, like, people don't understand where my video came from. It wasn't from a, do I think people shouldn't do this? Or do I think that people shouldn't do this? Or people shouldn't go train or that? It's not that. I just think that the problem is that when we romanticize war, or when we play war, like, I just don't think that they understand what comes along with that. Like, when I see people talk about killing people, or I hear people talking about it, there's nothing fun about it. Like, I don't have a lot of credibility in anything, but I have credibility in what it's like to take another human being's life. And I don't care how wrong they are. I don't care how evil they are. There's nothing fun about it. And when you do it in real life, it changes your life. I just don't think people understand what the weight of that looks like. And when I see them out doing this, and I see them out joking about this, or when I see, look, the people who take it serious, good on you. Good on you. You don't get to be an operator if you don't have the demons that come along with it. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Like, it's awesome. Like, go train, go do it, wear the body armor, do all that. But if you've never laid there and had wondered if you're ever going to see your family again on the side of a fucking mountain, wondering if you're ever going to see your friends again, put your friends, the people that you love the most with every moral fiber of your being into a body bag, and had to answer the questions of to their families of, well, why are you alive? And there's just a weight that comes along with it. And I think that people don't appreciate that weight. Like, yeah, it looks cool on video games, but it's not cool when you're getting rounds flying by your head and you don't know if you're ever going to come home. It's not cool when, you know, it's just one of those deals. And it's like, we kind of, and that's what my new book is with The Way Forward with Rob O'Neill. We kind of brought it back around. You know, when we wrote all these books, when we came home from war, we wrote them in a way that made them cool. Like, that's why you look at this. Like, that's why all this body armors became cool. That's why paint, look, I mean, look at all, everything changed. Like, I remember when we used to play paintball, it was just like jerseys and shit. And now it's became a tactical thing, right? Like, look, all these tactical things came after the war. Like, after 2005, 2006 is when all this stuff started evolving into tactical stuff and civilians getting into AR-15s. Like, all that stuff evolved after that, after we started coming back and telling the stories of what war was like. And it's because we wrote these books in a way that made war. I mean, when did Call of Duty come out? You know what I mean? It all came out after 2005, 2006, when people started coming back and telling the stories of what was going on overseas in the war and in heavy combat. And I think what kind of got left out was that we wrote it in a way to romanticize it. We didn't tell the effects of that it made on us. And so me and Rob talk about it kind of in The Way Forward. Rob tells this story about that, yeah, you know, so he kills bin Laden. And the first thing he did after he killed bin Laden is runs over and grabs onto the little girls, bin Laden's daughters. And when you think about these situations, they're not all black and white. Yeah, bin Laden deserves to die a million times over. There's no question on it. But there's two sides of this. Rob just killed the most wanted man in the world, but he also just became the most evil person to these two little girls. He just killed their dad. And it's like, these are the factors that are to it. That these are humans. There are, it's not just about me and you. It's not, there are factors that affect this. And there's a lot of people involved. I think that there's this day of reckoning, like when you come home. He used to look at it like that then. And it's like, you know, like I remember killing a guy in the valley. And when I did it, I was like, man, this is pretty fucking cool. This is what we trained to do. Like, we got to fucking kill people. Like, hell yeah, man, this is cool. This is awesome. And now I lay awake in bed at night and I just see his face all the time. And I just think about, like, dude, I didn't even know the guy.
How long did that take to kick in?
About after? 6 years.
After?
Mm-hmm. About 6 years. I don't regret anything I did, by no means. But I just think that people don't understand, like, there's a weight to it. And when I see kids, and I don't care. Look, people play video games, do it all. I think it's cool because I'd rather them be doing that than following some of these other fucking people they could be following in the world, right? But you got to literally think, like, video games and people playing this stuff, they're playing the exact same things that we've got veterans killing themselves every day over because they can't live with, because it's their nightmares.
So it's like, where do you separate that?
Where do you separate it, right?
Where's the line?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just think that it's like, we've got to humanize things again. We've got to start caring about people. We've gotten so separated from phones. Like, we can text people. I can text you and never talk to you and talk shit to you all day. You know, we talked about how people, like, I just think, like, we've got to be more thoughtful of, like, that people are just like us. We're all the same.
They feel.
They have families. When somebody talks shit to you, like, you know, the way I look at it is like, when somebody, like, talks shit to you or they say something to you, or like they say something off comment to you, like in person, well, you don't know what phone call they just got. You don't know what their life's like at home. You don't know if they just lost their job. You just don't know what the world's dealt them. And I think we got to kind of try to put that in perspective before we start reacting to engaging just to fight or just to be negative. It's like we've got to live life on our own terms and the way we want to be. We got to start giving off what we want to receive. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Yeah, we talked about like individual standards and society standards. And now that we're talking about this, it's getting me thinking, when you got the Medal of Honor, did people hold you to a standard that you weren't ready to be held to?
I mean, they still do. You know, like I walk into a room and I mean, because I got the Medal of Honor, it's like, well, you shouldn't say curse words.
They almost think you're like a robot.
Yeah, like they build, like they set the standard in their mind for me. And it's like, dude, I'm no different. You know, the difference in me, you and Owen is that I was standing in that valley that day and you weren't. That's the only difference. Like, I truly believe that in my heart, that the only difference between me and anyone who's wore the nation's cloth is that they weren't in my shoes that day. That's it. Like, I was there. I did what I had to do, and that was it. And you try to live up to it. You have to feel it. I mean, people look at you and they watch what you do and they set a standard for you. And look, the day you don't work, I mean, it's just, you know that like they build this standard or this perception of you in their mind. And if you don't meet that for some reason, well, it's just, you're just such a letdown. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons like I've always respected the things that you've done and put out there is that you don't try to... Society has set the standard for you. And you don't feel obligated that you have to live up to this standard and be someone that you're not. And you show these vulnerabilities. And I've always respected that, that you show these vulnerabilities and you talk about these real things, because it's shown like this is the real consequences. This is the collateral damage of things that happen that I'm sure thousands, hundreds of thousands of other Marines, soldiers, are also going through.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I've tried to find happiness at the bottom of a bottle. Like, we're all in search of something. We're all searching for, it's a journey. Like, right? Like, we're all, and I hate saying that, it's so cliche, but like, we're all on our own path. We're all looking for something. I don't know that we can ever identify what we're looking for, but we're all going in a direction trying to find whatever life is. Right. And it's always evolving. It's always changing. The landscape's always changing, whether you're coming out of a cave or whether you're coming over a new mountaintop. Right. And the hard part is in this world today, and what will keep society from growing and keep people from growing, is that with this cancel culture that's happened, you can't apologize and grow anymore publicly. You can't say something today and apologize for it after you get new information in 2 years. So what that does is people just start becoming robots and becoming what society tells them to be, because then they can blame it on society instead of being free thinkers and living on their own terms and taking a stance. Like, why, you know why you don't see people take a stance anymore? Because hell, what can you take a stance on that you won't get canceled in 2 years?
They're afraid.
So society's running them, and you got these people living it, and they just like, and you know, society standards are, they just keep changing with every political environment or every, whatever the fad is of the day. And people can't take a stance. And the reason they can't take a stance is because there is no more apologizing and saying, hey, look, I'm going to change my viewpoint and change my way of thinking because now I have more information and now I've evolved or I've changed as a person. Like, you're kind of boxed in to whatever you've set. You can't pull that wrong block and the Jenga house fall. And then you say, man, I shouldn't have pulled that block. I messed up. I'm going to fix this. And now that I know I can't pull that block, I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to build this back up and we're going to build it better. No way. You're the loser and you're identified as a loser forever because all you're remembered by is that block that you fucked up.
Because you pulled it.
Because you pulled it.
Yeah, it's a hard time to to recover. Also in this book that I'm reading, same book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. This guy talks about how people are negative and some people are angry. There could be someone performing at your job or at your work. They're the highest performer. They're making your company the most amount of money. But if they're negative or angry, that's what you're going to remember about them.
Yeah.
So they could say, how about James over there? James is making the most amount of money in this company for us. Everyone else just says, he's the angriest guy. You're remembered by how you treat people and not necessarily your strengths or weaknesses, but you're remembered and kind of honored by how you treat other people.
Yeah.
And your positivity.
And that's what you're going to be remembered by. When you look at the poem, The Dash, I'll read this to you. And it's kind of crazy that you just brought that up. And this is where Own the Dash came from.
I remember reading this on your website once. I don't know if it's the same thing, but to me, I didn't understand what Own the Dash was until I read this, and it completely changed it for me.
So it's like, you know, and it hit home to me because like, man, we've lost being in the military. Like you've seen a lot of, and even being as a first responder, like you see the beginning of life and you see the end of life a lot. And so Linda Ellis wrote this poem, The Dash, and it's so awesome. She says, I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke the following date with tears, but he said what matters most of all was that dash between those years. For the dash represents all the time they spent alive on earth, and now only those who love them know what the little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live in love and how we spend our dash. And so that's it. Have you ever gone to a funeral? Like you talk about the funeral is the last time that it's about you. And every day we're writing our eulogy. I know it's kind of morbid to think about, but it's like every day you're writing your eulogy. Every time you talk to somebody, whether they're going to be at your funeral or not, somebody's watching that. Or you don't know what that person's going to say. And so they're writing it and you're writing. You're actually writing what's going to be said about you at your funeral. Every impact you make, every phone call, every way you approach somebody. And that's how you're going to be remembered. Have you ever heard of anybody talking about how many cars somebody had at a funeral or how much money they made? No.
They never always will.
You never
should.
You never should. What do you hear? The things, the stories, the funny stories about them, the good times, the things that they did for other people. That's what people remember. And that's all that matters. And so it's like, if you want to change the world, that's been my goal ever since I got the Medal of Honor. And I'll never forget, like they tried to like, oh, you know, you need to be doing this or you need to wear that medal. You got to wear the medal and all this stupid shit. And I don't wear, like I gave the medal to my daughter and I said, you know what? Like all I want to do in life is I want to change the world. I truly believe that if you want to change the world, it's as simple as doing two things. If you wake up every day and do something to make yourself just a little bit better, whether it's read a book, whether it's eat healthy, whatever you got to do to make yourself a little bit better. And then you do something every day to make the world around you a little better that you didn't have to do. My grandpa was by far one of the greatest men that I've ever met in my life. Hard guy. Hard, hard guy. But I'll tell you what, he left every room with dignity. When he walked out of a room, he left it with dignity all the way until the day that that man died. When I watched him die and I sat next to him and I watched him die, I'm like, that is how I'm going to die. Like this guy died so much with dignity. And what do I mean by that? He held you accountable, but he would die for you. Like he would do anything you needed, be there for you, be there and listen, answer the call. I mean, he's going to tell you what you need to hear. But every room he left with dignity. He always put in more work than he what he got. He always made the room better. He always tried to, I mean, I'll never forget everybody he gave a compliment to. Like, you know, he would just sit there and he'd just give you a compliment. And my grandpa, I mean, he's still the hardest guy I know. And I'll never forget, man, like, my grandma was sitting next to him and they were married for like almost 60 some years. And my grandma was next to him, and like the doctor would come in. I flew back home on Monday. It was after the New York Marathon. And I flew in because I knew they said he was about to pass. So I flew in, and my grandpa was my best friend. I sat next to him. I said, I'm not leaving the hospital until he goes. I sat next to him, and every day the doctor came in, they're like, no way he'll make it till in the morning. So my grandma's there, and she's sitting next to him the whole time. Finally, Friday morning, she said, I'm going to go home. I'm going to take a shower. He made it through the night, and I'm going to come back. I'll be back in just a little bit. We're like, all right. So she held his hand. She gave him a kiss. She told him she was going home. And she got in her, like my dad was pushing her down to the car in the wheelchair, and he pushed the wheelchair, and as soon as it broke the door frame, soon as my grandma's wheels broke the door frame, he took his last breath. He was not going to die in front of her. Like, he even died with dignity. And like, that is exactly how we have got to live. No matter what, no matter what society tells us that we should believe, no matter what society tells us we should do, no matter if society tells us that women should be equal to us, we don't fucking follow society standards. Women are better than us. Women are more important than us. That's the way that the world was created. That's the way that humans were created. And that's the standard that we have. We have got to hold the standard. It's not about fighting. It's not about wars. It's not about oil. It's not about money. It's about us holding the line as to right and wrong, and to treating people and leaving rooms with dignity.
That's amazing. I couldn't help but think that entire time during that, you know, story of her grandfather. It was kind of a similar story with my mom. She was the same way. She passed away 2 years ago, ovarian cancer. At her funeral, it was just people talking about like the selfless acts and service that she provided within the Special Olympics community. She was a coach. Special education. She was very involved. It was just people talking about how she changed their lives. And it made me think, because I was reading a book the other day, and it brought up the same concept where when you die, no one cares what you drove, no one cares where you lived or what you had, but it was the impact you made on the world. And I think that every single day, every single morning I wake up, I think that, because no one cares, but they'll remember what you left and how you left it.
Yeah. And they still talk about it. Like, what do people think, like, the people that knew your mom? Look at the memories that she left them with. Isn't that the goal that we should all have?
That's my goal. I mean, that changed my life 2 years ago, where it's modeled what my priorities are now. Before, it was things. It was materialistic things. It was, how do I grow this business to make more money and have a nicer car? And after that, there was a big shift. It was that shit doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter at all. But it's like, how are you going to make a difference?
How long did she get diagnosed with cancer before she passed?
6 months.
6 months. So, you know, I mean, dude, you're not guaranteed 6 months. I run on calls. But you're not guaranteed anything. You only are going to get so many chances. You don't always get the chance to do the next right thing. You need to be doing the right thing right now. And just hope that you get the opportunity to do the next right thing if you mess up. And it's like, I just see people's lives change all the time. And you know, when shit hits the fan, nobody cares about the materialistic things. Nobody cares about the clothes you wear. If we would just go back to that way of life, of treating people and leaving the world, living a life of dignity, that's what changes the world. Dignity. It sounds simple, but it's a hard way to live, especially when everybody else doesn't do it. And it's like, live on your own terms. And it's like, set your priorities. You can't walk through life and not have goals and not have priorities wrote down. That's kind of like not using your GPS and not using a map and driving your car and not having a destination. Like, you're just going to run out of gas and you're going to end up where you don't want to be at. How much sense does that make?
Excellent way to put it.
Like, it's literally, like, have a plan. And yeah, life is never going to go as you want it to. And for me, it's like, it's my kids. It's making sure. And all these things evolve around each other, because you can't be a good father if you're not good. It's like a boat, right? It's like a big boat. The bigger boat you have, the more people you can have on it. But if your boat's not in good condition and your boat can't run and you don't have a motor on your boat doesn't have life jackets on it, how do you help anybody else? You don't. You just sink. That's what it's all about, man. It's like, I mean, we don't get to hang out very much, but man, like, I respect you. I watch all your stuff. I mean, you're an incredible human being. I mean, I'll be honest, like, you have no reason to answer my phone calls when I call you some middle of the fucking day. And you always do. I mean, you're by far one of the best dudes I've ever met. Everything you do, and that's what's so cool about, like, your content and about, I mean, you really live it. Like, you're not just doing this shit to make money. Like, you live the lifestyle. Like, this is not just a business for you. Like, this is literally a way of life. Like, you wake up every day and try to figure out how to make to be better, everything to be better. And it's like, I remember walking in here and us doing our first podcast over there. Man, it just sticks with me all the time about, like, your mindset is just so, you've got a mindset that, like, is unstoppable. Like, it's unstoppable. Like, I don't know how you got there. I don't know where you got it from, but it's like your mindset and perspective is just so insightful and it's so disciplined. It's just insane. It's insane.
I appreciate that, man. It means a whole ton, obviously, coming from you. I've learned a lot, especially watching you and over the past couple of years.
Watching what not to do. Watching what not to do.
No, man, I take away, like I said, like, I respect your vulnerability and I've taken away a lot. And I remember a few months ago, it's probably over a year ago at this point, before I got married.
Yeah.
You gave me some really good advice going into marriage.
Yeah.
And I still hold on to that. I remember where I was standing, I was outside of the gym one night after a late night working out, and you gave me some advice, and I've held on to that.
Yeah.
Very strongly, and it's worked.
Yeah, man, because the greatest title that you're ever going to have, and I think I told you at night, is being a husband. Like, you're never going to have another title that somebody gives you or chooses for you in your entire life that's going to be more important than that one. Your kids don't choose you. Your kids don't choose that you're their father. So you don't get giving the father title. You don't earn it. You literally just have kids. There's no other son. I mean, like, somebody had you. Like, none of those are chosen. The most sacred title you're ever going to have is that somebody else chose you and gave you the title to be the most important role in their life and to be a husband. And it's like, you know, you always keep that in perspective of, like, that's what's going to matter. That's what's going to matter.
No, I remember that. First couple of months of marriage, I've had to remind myself that.
Yeah.
A few times. But that put things into perspective like no other. And just you saying it again almost is like relit that spark.
Yeah, man.
You realize how powerful it really is.
Me and Bristol have had some of the, publicly nasty. I mean, you go down it. And I'll tell you this, like, she still gave me that title. By far, it was a terrible marriage and it was hard, but it was by far the greatest title that anyone has ever bestowed on me. And that's me being divorced and have gone through all that, right? And it's like, I look back today and, you know, I look at how I handle things, and I just tell you, man, like, a lot of the bullshit you argue with, and it's growing. Like, you know, like when you start working out, you start a new workout program, well, you start getting sore, right? It changes it up and you're not as fast as you want to be, or your cardio's not at the level you want it to be. And it's kind of like what marriage is, or any new relationship is like. The more it hurts, as long as it's obviously not toxic, but the more it hurts, like, dude, you're just growing. You're just fucking growing, right? You're just growing and you're getting those muscles bigger and you're going to be stronger and building that foundation. It's badass. Like, man, I tell you, that's, women are by far the greatest thing that God ever put on earth. No fucking doubt. They're the strongest. They're the most resilient. They are a power to be reckoned with. It's like pretty awesome that they even like put up with how men are, you know, like, we're not even on their level. Like, and that's what I think our society's gotten away from realizing, that when I hear, like, well, women should be equal, why would they drop down to our level? Men don't protect women because they're weak. They protect them because they're important. And it's like, no, we all know that women are stronger than us. We all know, like, the only thing we have on women is most of the time is physical. Like, we were built different because we're made to protect them. But outside that, like, they smoke us in every fucking aspect of life. They're smarter than us. They're more thoughtful than us. I mean, and you'll start watching it. Like, you want to talk about what you will start. You want to talk about the value you'll start seeing in your wife is when you sit back, you just start putting together the differences in your mind, right? Like, when you start seeing her, how thoughtful she is, and you're like, fuck, why can't I think about that? Like, why can't I think about this birthday?
You know, I think about that all the time.
Right. It just shows you, right? And like, dude, when you all have kids, that's when it's over for you. You will see just how resilient and amazing creatures that women are. Your whole perspective and respect for them will just go through the roof when you get to watch that and you get to see like how they are as a mother. It's crazy, man. Like it's incredible. It's an incredible deal. You're a lucky man.
I'm excited. That next phase of life is coming up here.
That'd be awesome.
Soon.
That'd be awesome. It changed your life. You talk about growing.
Oh, I know it's going to. I know it's going to.
Like kids will, man, I'm still trying to figure them out. You talk about like a challenge every day, like balance. And you talk about like, dude, you've never felt love like when you see your own kid. Like when your kid comes up to you and just wraps their arm, like they don't see evil. What they see, dude, they don't care how much money you make. They don't care if you're living in a cardboard box or you're living in a fucking mansion. Like, dude, they just want your time. And you talk about pure good. When you see that, you're going to be like, man. And it's the cool part is kids, they start out as the best of their parents. Like the absolute very best of you will be right there. All you can do is fuck it up.
Well, I'm expecting when that time comes, another phone call from you, and I will be all ears and ready to
I'm here.
Take full influence.
I'm here, man.
Dakota, thank you, man.
Thanks so much.
That was a good one. It's always good to connect.
Yes.
And we still have to grab a steak together. Last time, we always run into each other at Steiner, but we're on like separate dinner dates.
Yeah, we are.
One of these times, we're going to go together.
I'm in. All right, man. Good seeing you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Bear Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please feel free to leave a review on iTunes or share it with a friend. It helps us to grow and reach more people in hopes of changing lives with the Go One More mindset. Head on over to bpnsups.com for all your health, performance, and nutrition needs. We offer a wide range of products to help you feel and perform at your highest level, built on quality and proven by results without compromise.